Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Hannes, co-founder and COO of ZeroX. ZeroX is a carbon removal company that uses enhanced weathering to fight climate change. By spreading rock powder on farmland, they permanently bind atmospheric CO2 as the minerals break down, while also improving soil health. ZeroX handles everything from site exploration to implementation certification, ensuring transparency and measurable impact. We'll learn more about their story in just a second. Welcome, Hannes.
Thanks so much for having me, Jan. Great to be here.
And it's a pleasure. As you know, my first question to my guest is always, who are you as a person? How did you end up becoming the co-founder and CEO of the company? So tell me.
Yeah, for sure. So always when I'm asked that, I like to start more on the private side, which is not the German way. The German way is more to start on I do X, Y, Z. And hence, I would describe myself as an adventurer. So I very much enjoy spending time in nature and climbing in the Alps close to Munich. So that's where ZeroX is based at. And yeah, also an entrepreneur, which is running startups since now 6 years. I, back in the day, started my first company in Beijing. And then after that, yeah, studied in the realm of business and international management, which in that sense also first confronted me with the necessity of carbon removals. So the broader sense that I had my first classes in at Harvard, which, for example, some were about climate change, about different pathways. One of these classes being confronting climate change with the geologist Daniel Schrag. And that's also where I first came across different carbon removal solutions. And
right.
Among these also enhanced weathering. And yeah, then we discussed different natural processes and so on. And like your last guest, Nicholas from Pronoi, I then was very excited about the idea of leveraging a natural process. And this is basically how we got to enhance weathering in the first place, and the idea of removing carbon through accelerating a natural process. So much for that.
Great. So maybe for everyone who's not familiar with enhanced weathering and sort of the different carbon removal approaches and technologies, maybe in a nutshell, how does enhanced weathering work and how is it different from other solutions out there?
Yes, for sure. So, I mean, maybe one step back here, right? So we're currently at, I believe, 50 gigatons of emissions a year. And hence we looked at solutions that had a potential to remove a big chunk when scaled. So we very much looked into this idea of how big could this ever become? And enhanced weathering has such a big potential. Now, what is enhanced weathering? It's, as the name suggests, enhancing a natural process here. And weathering process is the one where basically, so a natural process is sped up. And this process is that finally, So we apply fine rock powder, crushed rock powder, to agricultural land. And this means, so the process that is then taking place is rock powder that is then reacting with CO2 in the atmosphere and converting CO2 into a stable mineral compound, which is permanently bound and going then through the soil into the riverine system and then into the ocean finally. So this way it is bound and removed over several thousands of years and permanently stored. And basically this is the solution here.
Gotcha. And how would you how would you describe the difference compared to other solutions? So why should people focus on enhanced weathering, or why has it even become more and more important? I think that's the more relevant question.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I feel
point.
Sort of the origin of carbon removal technologies has been, or a lot of focus has been on direct air capture, and this is where a lot of attention originally was focused on. But from my perspective, enhanced weathering has become more and more prominent in also some sort of media discussions over the last maybe 3 to 5 years. So sort of what has shifted, and yeah, how would you rank those different technologies? What should you use for which?
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, especially recently with, for example, the X Prize going to some enhanced weathering winners, with also so much in funding going into enhanced weathering and also buyers more and more purchasing enhanced weathering. It's definitely relative to other solutions on the up and coming. That's very true. And I believe so. The science already has been there since 20 more years, right? And behind enhanced weathering, but no one truly looked into this on the commercial and operational side since more than, like, let's say the last 3 to 5, 4 years, right? When it's actually
Right.
been scaled. Now, to compare it to other solutions. So, as you said, right, direct air capture really, I mean, created this entire space of carbon removal. Now, I would compare it in a couple of areas. So the first one, for example, being resource usage, right? Where enhanced weathering is using already existing resources. So it's using a byproduct here that we are using from the mining industry. Secondly, it's very well integrated, right? So it is not requiring to build up a new factory, a new site, which would require land and again resources from the first point, but it's integrating very well because you already have the mining parts of the feedstock, you already have the streets, you already have the existing spreading technology from the farmer that is then in the application process being used. So it is integrating very well there. And then finally, it also has quite a lot of co-benefits. So that's for the soil itself, for example, the minerals, but also water holding capacity. And yeah, as a final point, also for the farmer, because for the farmer themselves, it's replacement for agricultural liming, so they no more lime, so they use the rock powder for increasing their pH value, for keeping the areas productive. So you also have this fertilizing effect here, which very much, yeah, brings down the point that you have these co-benefits. You don't have too big of a resource usage here, and that's basically how it compares. And also it is permanent, right? So there's always this debate, for example, with different biochar solutions, how permanent they are. And it's very clear that enhanced weathering is very permanent. On the downside, you know, very realistically, on the bad, on the negative side, we also have to claim here that the proving the how much CO2 has been stored is the problem of enhanced weathering, right? So that's the biggest, so to say, challenge, to be very
Right.
frank here, right? Where the entire industry is still like working on. And basically this is a challenge, for example, direct air capture or biochar. They don't have that in that scale because, you know, you can measure it very clearly how much has been removed.
Yeah, really good points. And we'll probably get into the that part of sort of certification and how much
Yes.
CO2 you actually removed a bit later down the road in the conversation. So far we established we have to remove carbon. That's important, and you clearly stated that enhanced weathering is a really good route, especially because of all the co-benefits that, for example, other technologies like direct air capture don't have. So, understood that part. So, let's turn to Zero X. What's sort of your uniqueness? What do you bring to the market? Sort of, what's the problem that you identified that you then set out to solve?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and one final point to enhanced weathering, right, is that I want to add to the previous point that it's also very scalable, right? So the I meant I kind of mentioned it in the beginning of my response there, but it's because you have millions of tons of feedstock
Right.
that is very much usable. You and then it depends on what kind of study you look at, but they go up to 4 gigatons in removal potential when scaled up, right? And also when you use feedstock and you crush it and so on. So when you really scale it up all the way. So, you know, just to make clear that there's no, so to say, limitations on the feedstock side, it's more on the side of then the measurement point, as mentioned. Now, to your question. So, yeah, with ZeroX, we started in 23, and with our first pilot in 24, we deployed 23,000 tons of rock powder here in Germany and also received now this year our certification in. From Isometrics, so we're the first European certified biometric project, and very happy with that. Now,
Yeah, that's a big one, I would assume.
It is a big one because the first one was in Planet, and so far I believe there are only a couple ones, right? Not even a handful of companies. And I mean, yeah, Symmetry is just very trusted, right? That they it was a very funny situation when we had German farmers talking to our VVB and
Right.
Isometric themselves on the farms. There was an interesting situation. But back to the point of what we do and what we bring to the table. So, as mentioned, we are now the biggest ones here in Germany, but we don't believe that you should you should scale before you actually do the MRV, so the measurement part, and you have a very clear sense of how to go about that. And secondly, also at this point, the price point of enhanced weathering is still above biochar, right? So this is also a challenge, as quite a lot in each enhanced weathering credit is spent on measurement. So this is a bit where we decided to
Right.
focus upon this industry problem of
Because just to make
measurement.
this clear, right, the measurement part, as you just said, right, the price component of measuring doesn't ultimately create, well, to be frank, it doesn't really create value, right?
Exactly
Ultimately, what you're
correct.
saying is it's about removing the carbon that creates
Yes.
value,
Yes.
and the co-benefits, those create value. But the measurement part is sort of the inherent issue that you're trying to solve. It's a cost to the process. So if you're trying to bring this down, it solves the real challenge that you described before.
That is exactly correct. And sure, in let's say 5 years, we will have a much more model heavy approach, but we first need the data, right, to create the models. And unfortunately, the models at this point, and depending on what research papers you look at, still differ by factors 10 or even more, right? So there's still very high uncertainty. And of course, that also depends on what measurement approach you take here, right? So basically, making exactly that point, right? In order to get costs down, you need to get to a model-based approach. But in order to get to that, you first need to get really good data here with a high certainty. Now, just for context, so in enhanced weathering, you can either use water-based approaches or soil-based approaches, but they are quite unreliable, costly, and also not very precise in actually measuring sequestration rates. So, what we have developed is an ion exchange resin, and the term here is SIA, SIA, self-integrating accumulator. This is a device that we are installing in the soil, and that then is in the soil for a year, and it is capturing weathering products, so with a very high certainty. So we are capturing almost all of them, so only 5% or less of these are not being captured, which is a very big point because, well, some developers had to account for up to 40% in uncertainty that they then could
Right.
not issue as a credit here, right?
Right.
So basically, very much making the point that this is a big pain point of the industry. And to bring this home there, so we have really brought this to the public in December in 24. So at the AGU, which is one of the largest conferences in the world, and we since then have interest not only from other enhanced weathering companies, so our competitors here ultimately, and now to 15 in all, so the big ones that are interested in piloting this, but also from, and we see this as more interesting, the industries along the value chain of enhanced weathering. So, for example, mining or also, farming, because they either have the land or they have the feedstock, right? And they have the feedstock in the millions of tons. So, we have been approached by these and are very much in the process of co-developing projects together with them. So, to mention one example here, we work with one large multinational mining company that is, that they have feedstock around the world in up to 40 quarries. Not all of them are, suitable with enhanced weathering, but basically, how we work with them is that we provide them with so first of all, our device, but also with the MRV part of how to set up a project that an isometry will also say we very much approve of this, and then also the entire documentation and streamlining of this. And the mining company, they have that material, right? It's for them. There's no use, so to say, and
Right.
they can then
It's
either use
waste
the
ultimately for them, right?
That's exactly correct. They hate the word when we say it in
That's why I can use it.
negotiations.
That's why I
Exactly.
can
You
use
can
it.
very much use it, and that's why we don't say it when negotiating with them, but that's exactly correct. It's a byproduct. And then maybe depending on the quarry, you still need to crush it, right? Because of that's the importance of particle size being very small for a higher surface and fast sequestration. But yeah, ultimately making the point here that we see the large scale-up potential of enhanced weathering in these collaborations because they have the feedstock, they have the operational know-how, they take care of logistics and all these points, and then we can complement that with our own tech, with the MRV background that we have, with clearly this made in Germany first approach. So we also were there very conservative, right? So we did not go to market and sold any of our certificates before we actually deployed our project. So a more conservative approach if you compare us to others in the industry. And then, taking that blueprint to other countries with mining and farming partners and scaling that up.
Great summary. I would add one part to make sure I've understood it correctly. What I know from other enhanced weathering plays, it's they don't have that hardware component. And I think that's something I would say from the outset unique to me that you integrate that additional device in solving the challenge that we discussed before, sort of that cost factor of bringing the transparency, the certification, the measurement to the table. Is that correct? Is that sort of a real added benefit that you have developed in order to sort of bring more value to the market and solve the issues that we've been discussing so far?
Yes, I would subscribe to that. The main point is that every enhanced weathering company needs some standard hardware, right? For example, let's say suction cups for for example, water-based measurements or soil samples, right? But these are not developed by themselves, right? So this is very much here, as you mentioned, our own development. This device already has been used quite some time in other applications in other areas, right? So this is not reinventing the wheel, but this is very much development in the enhanced weathering space, which is very unique in terms of its very low costs per ton that it enables, in its accuracy, and also in its appreciation from the industry itself. So Isometric is already, they already use that as a, or included this in the V11 enhanced weathering methodology as a secondary method, and as soon as there's more data, as a primary certification method. So very much also this idea of this not being a standalone into a solution, but much more an integration into a system where it's very clear that in order to scale enhanced weathering, you need to have this trust, especially in an industry where unfortunately not every customer knows the difference in the different pathways, but also the differences in, let's say, just for starters, removals or avoidance credits. And of course, there being quite a high number of incidences and projects that were not real, overcrediting and so on. So I think it's very important to establish that for the entire enhanced weathering industry, so that then there's more trust for buyers, and ultimately that is necessary for it to scale as one point, right? And then to get to a cost point, that enhanced weathering project, let's say in the Global South, right? That's also why we are co-developing projects now in Brazil. With that, we in these areas where there's already much lower cost points, then combined with our technology, get to cost points of 150 or so dollars, and then are very much competitive with biochar, right? Because all the money, and that understandably, right, is, or a lot of the money is going to biochar. So
Yeah,
this is something that
because
enhanced
right
weathering
now
needs
that's
to
at
aim at.
a lower price point,
It's
from
at
what
a
I
lower
understand.
cost point, exactly correct. And also, it is already more trusted, right? I mean, it's a technology that has been around for so long time. So I believe that that's very understandable from a buyer's perspective, right? And I mean, price ultimately counts. We very much believe that quality needs to come first in order to establish trust. And then you can bring prices down to that level of biochar, let's say.
Understood. Because you just mentioned the buyers and customers,
Yes.
and we talked about the mining companies before. who are your customers? Because you also mentioned, Brazil as a market. So maybe you
Yes.
can just give us and the listeners an overview of the landscape of who are you selling to, who are you working with?
Yes, of course. So there are for us two types of customers, right? One is the big credit customers, and then the second one is our customers on the co-development side of our
Right.
projects, right? So let's get into the first type of customer. So just for the listeners that might be not so familiar with the removal market, right? So there are not too many
Which is, I
companies.
have to say that it's a very complicated market. I
It is a
feel,
very complicated market.
as you did, I think that's a very important point before we go into those
Yes.
two customer groups, because you just mentioned that, right? Like there's avoidance credits, there's removal credits, and so on. And I feel like there's a certain lingo, a certain language around that space that's quite unique and it's hard to get into. That's the one part. But the other part is also the trust issue that you mentioned before around projects that have been set up and maybe overcredited in the past that have sort of led to a bit of a negative reputation, the whole carbon removal space before. So sort of it's a complicated space, and right now maybe not a fully trusted one in sort of from the general perspective. So that's really, a hard one to understand. So an interesting one, just an observation there.
That is exactly correct. And I mean, honestly, to add one point there, it is also so on one side, you have this challenge politically, right? That there's always this idea that you, so to say, that there's a either or between removing and reducing, which is
Right.
obviously not what we're proposing. Also, as a company, we very much don't want to only, or and then the, on that side, we agree, right, with the UN, do either or because you will. You know, we won't be able to unfortunately reduce to zero, and then you still have already the emissions that are already in the atmosphere. But you will need these negative emissions for, let's say, heavy industries or air freight, all these industries that won't get to a zero at any point in time. So this is on one side, this may be public but also political understanding of you can do both, right? And obviously there should be going always more resources into reducing. So this is very much agreed upon, right? From, I believe, the biggest part of the industry here. Now for the market, right? So as you mentioned these terms, right? Like VCM and so on. So on one side, there's this regulated market where, for example, in the EU ETS, companies are mandated to purchase a certain amount of credits. On the other side, there's the voluntary market. And right, that is our main market. So we very much, because we are at a higher price point, are focusing on companies that have such big budgets that are very much then in also having commitments in order to, how much they want to remove, how much they want to reduce. And so, for example, to name a couple names, right, like 80% of the market is Microsoft. And then you have a big other software companies like Google, TikTok also recently purchased, and not so many other industries, but you always need industries with big profit margins that even can allow themselves to do that, right? So that's also a reason why not too many German companies are yet participating in this market because,
Right.
yeah, it requires a very large, large, yeah, budget and also, honestly, a commitment to kind of get the industry from the ground because it's very much not yet at a point where you can say it's price competitive, right? So we gotta be, I think, that fair. So, this is the first group of customers here, and we, for example, just to just in the case of Xerox, name some, we closed the deal with one of the big three consultancy companies, as well as with one of the alliances that is purchasing for many customers at once. So, for to explain that in one sentence, basically, as not every company has, for example, the scientific know-how or the expertise to make a decision or due diligence process themselves, they then bundle it in one company, right? That is basically in one group of people that is purchasing for a larger number of companies together. Now, that's the first part, right? Big credit customers. Second part here. So companies along the value chain of enhanced weathering. Now, for them, the incentive to work with us is in the first place to, yeah, for, to say very bluntly, for them, it's a new business case on the one side, right? Very much that they see here. So they can use a product that they already have, right? That they have no other use for, and with not too much effort can deploy. They obviously also see the co-benefits for the soils, right? The collaboration with the farmers, but that's one big chunk so that they have a new business stream here. And then the second part for them might also be insetting, right? So that they use some of these credits that they have generated to offset their own emissions and also to, see potentially whether you can get the message to the public that mining is not only bad, right? That's, I believe, a bit the simplified public image, right, of mining and quarries in general, which, yeah, m now there might be this opportunity to change that perception of mining through doing own projects and being very much active and a participant in this, and not to say only purchasing credits, but being active oneself with project development and to counter that narrative with, their own positive project, so to say, in the global south specifically. But also, there are some quarries now that do this in, for example, Canada or the US. So, this is a broader development in the entire enhanced weathering space where now mining companies are seeing this field as well as farming ones that are proactively getting into this and asking questions to project developers, to consultants, and so on. How do we set up our own project? And there we come
Right.
in because we already have this expertise since 23 on all these nitty-gritty questions on how the contract with the farmer must look like, how do we make sure that the trucks go to the right field and so on, and therefore we believe it costs quite some money, so to say, learning fees that you need to pay in order to set up a streamlined, well operating, functioning enhanced weathering project that expertise we already have built up in Germany and are now replicating in other countries.
Plus, it's not the core business of everyone who's involved, right? It's
Exactly.
sort of, I mean, this is your core expertise, and I
Yes.
think that's what you can bring to the table. Sweet. Understood. And so we talked about sort of b both the biochar and the enhanced weathering space quite a bit today, which is really exciting. What I would love for our listeners to pin down is sort of, what would you say are the USPs that you bring to the table? What's sort of unique about your solution? I think we covered that already, but before we move on, I would just like to sort of summarize that for everyone, if you could just
Yes,
talk about
for
that for a
sure.
second.
Yes, and I will, as you said, bring to the main point. So the first one, right, is, as you said, the technology part. So our self-integrating accumulators that also are still in development for further applications, such as, for example, measuring heavy metals, because that's a big topic, right? There's always a question we're being asked now, if you use this feedstock, aren't you then, doing something negative to the soils, which then always depends on what kind of feedstock. We, for example, use a basalt here in Germany, but also olivines can be used, right? So that's one point, the tech that we have here developed. Now, that brings us to our second point, which is a USP that we are right now in the build up. These devices that are now being installed in different geographies around the world. So we have projects in Germany, in the Ukraine, in the US, in Brazil, and more are added to this list by the day. We are able, as we then receive the data from our devices from all these different geographies, to build up a data set that allows us to compare different conditions. And as it's an open system, it's always very tough to pinpoint, how much sequestration is possible in one place, but also how much are the costs and so on. So enhanced weathering, so to say, is you don't have these data sets yet.
Right.
Now, what we're going to be able to do here is to combine all the data on sequestration, right? So everything that goes into how much is being removed. So the different soil, the different crop types, the different weather, the different so also how the farmer is cultivating their fields, right? It's such a big number of variables that you have here. So everything that goes into how much can you remove, with then on the other side everything that it costs. So to say, how high are the transportation costs, the feedstock costs, the spreading costs, and so on in every different area, and then bring this together to a data set or a heat map from around the world, where we then there are a very well position to estimate the removal potential and also the cost potential. So ultimately, what is the potential of enhanced weathering in a certain new region of the world with this feedstock, with these costs, and so on, in order to find the most profitable or the most attractive sites to conduct enhanced weathering projects, whether this is then ourselves or together with a local partner, is to see in the future. But we believe that it's very much the next step, and also coming closer to that point that you mentioned before, right, with the model, that we will never have an environment where you need no measurements, right? You always need some, like whether this is then like lower density or, certain, like only, let's say, one and not a secondary method anymore, right? But that's to come in the, let's say, next 5 years. But you will very much and rely in the planning on models, right? So, for example, for them, a new project that you want to set up, not only for a model that is, as of now, limited more to the sequestration calculation side, right? But then you'll be able, with these data, to set up this data set, enabling you to decide where to set up new projects, who to partner with, and where the true potential is of enhanced weathering. I mean, broadly, that's already clear, right? In Global South, so enhanced weathering won't scale in the Global North. Of course, you still have all the feedstock there that you can crush and execute your project, but it's just different when you have much faster weathering rates because of the climate and also more impacts, for example, on the co-benefit side, because for Brazilian soil you have more benefits than fertilizing effect, for example, than for a typical German soil, right? So these points for that answer as a final point, right? We're also, as mentioned, certified here. So I believe that's also why customers approach us, and also many more through Isometric, but also through overall this Made in Germany stamp here with the strictest regulations that we need to apply to. So, for example, a lot of feedstock we cannot use because it's not complying with Germany's fertilizing laws that are very strict. We know that
Of course they
some.
are.
Yeah, of course they are, and of course we needed to, talk to a lawyer that wrote us a 30-page legal opinion on this as well. So we are very much, so to say, already very regulated in this area that we believe is an advantage in order to bring this to other places as well. So this even if it's not the biggest scale up potential in Germany, but nonetheless it's proving that it's possible here, and we will continue to run that here in Germany.
Yeah, really exciting what you shared about the use of data, because I think that's, again, we talked a lot about transparency, right, and trust in the market. And obviously having all that data, as you said, you framed it, I think, as the most profitable ones. You could also argue that having all that data will allow you to come to that interesting price point where you're competitive or more competitive than other solutions. And I think that's the really exciting part, right? Having this data will allow you to know what to do, and not just, as of now, I guess, have limited visibility before the project actually starts. And I think that's the really exciting part in scaling up all over the world, then with all the information that you have about the soils, the feedstocks, weather conditions, and so on. So I think
And
that's
in
the
one
real
sentence,
power engine.
here on the in the comparison with different pathways, because you need to think in comparison. A buyer will always compare all these different opportunities he has to purchase a credit, or and I believe that's why it's so important to look much further than enhanced weathering into comparing with whether that's BECCS and also reforestation, DEC, and so on. So all the other pathways that also need to scale, but only with this development on the data side, we will be able to go to a price point and also to a trust point, the where then you can trust this. Because, to be very frank, we are at the beginning of the data side in comparison to, let's say, biochar.
Yeah, really good points. But then hopefully that's happening soon and making fast progress, which leads me to my next question. So you sort of shared the journey and talked a lot about customer traction. I would love to know sort of how far have you already come, and then what's next for you. So if you could talk about that, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, 100%. So we I will mention here a couple of points. So first one is this certification milestone for us was a big one. The second one was to prove that it's possible in Germany and that we are very much still able to sell a credit at a higher cost point, right? So that there's that readiness from buyers, although we won't see that always to be happening in the future, right? And then thirdly, to prove our technology, because it's not self-evident that you have a technology that is acquired by, on one side, competitors, but also new entrants to this entire market, right? That I will mention here. So these 3 points are a bit the pillars of how far we've come so far. And you know, maybe as a to bring it out, to describe it more in with images here, is that in the beginning in 23 we were just, you know, a couple of very, I would call it in retrospect, ignorant, not to be too hard on ourselves, but we didn't know what enhanced. It sounds always, you know, quite simple, like just spread some feedstock on, you know, on the field, and off we go. That's definitely it has been a very steep learning curve since then, right? Because it's always these also then seemingly small points, whether this is, for example, on the operational side or on the data side, which are really at the end of the day the key. Because if you make one mistake on the MIV side or on the ops side, it can be very much lead to quite some issues with the project itself, right? So this was a big learning curve. Or we, for example, we started as group of we also quite a like young team, right? We now have more professionals. We have now the number of PhD in comparison to the entire team is very high, right? I believe they are almost already making up a majority by now. So making the point here that in the beginning we started as a group that then had issues, for example, with trucks that went to the wrong field or in the rain needed to be taken out of the field because it was raining so strongly, then a crane had to come there and be taken out, right? These operational points, and no, you know, me speaking now from the ops perspective, as that's my key responsibility in the company, they will always persist, but it's just how much you streamline them, how much you can anticipate them, right? So we
Build
have had a
systems around
very
them, right?
exactly built systems around them, try to work with farmers that might not want to communicate a lot or might not remember what you've told them in the first place, not to but also are very good businessmen, right? You have to get very much give them that. I have met so great businessmen, so to say, from the farming community here. So very much also building up that learning curve to a business that is now much more streamlined, that is now in the process of setting up an international like co-development process and system with external partners that we would not have thought of in the first place. We also would not have thought of all the challenges and obstacles that would came in between. We all definitely overestimated, I would say, also the demand from the market, right? Which is not a given, but it is a given as soon as you sell to the most trusted partners in this industry. For
Yeah,
example, you know,
lovely.
just the final point here, when you sell, let's say, to a Microsoft or to one of the big ones, then it's immediately a signal to the other ones. So this is what's happening right now also on our side here.
Yeah. It's those partnerships, right? If you have them in place, sort of everything else that maybe was a closed door before out of something opens up, which is lovely to see. And just to the point that you mentioned before, I think it's often very helpful that you don't know the full picture before starting that endeavor, right? Because otherwise you wouldn't dare.
That is so
But
true.
as you just, you know, go along and tackle those challenges as they come up, they don't seem as frightening anymore. And you also build up that knowledge. I think that's very clear that, you know, today's conversation is also, I think, proof of that, how much you know about the market, how much you understand it, which I guess was just not the case when you started the business a few years back. But sort of that's also, it's not just the company scale-up journey, it's also your own personal scale-up.
That is so true. That reminds me of what Jensen Huang from NVIDIA said to the question of, would you do it again? No. If he'd known everything, that would be, you know, later on. So, I mean, it's always, you know, like simple then from, after the fact. reflect on what happened and to no more see this entire, whether that's learning curve or all the unknown unknowns, and so on. But I believe that is a big fact, and especially in Germany. Luckily now there's more and more companies again, that more ventures, more people that begin their startups, which is a very good sign, because unfortunately exactly these thoughts of this is going to be so much work, I rather go on the safe side, right? And the bureaucracy and all these points, right, from an entrepreneur perspective here in Germany, unfortunately then lead to not so many people starting their startups, which, so that's a great development currently that is taking place again.
Yeah. And just to say that as well, obviously the corporate side probably is a lot more comfortable, right? Like for you as well, you could have chosen w with your background, you mentioned a consultancy. You could have had, I mean, consultancy jobs are also quite time consuming, but they're also financially rewarded in a very attractive way. So, that could have been an option for you, or, a big corporate. And I would assume on the amount of hours that you put in and the amount of energy that you put in would be a more beneficial tip of scales. But it's also a very fulfilling journey that you're on. So that's a reflection. And I guess you're right. It's good not to know that beforehand, but it's also highly rewarding when you look back what you've
Yeah,
achieved.
it is. And we have such an amazing team that is making that possible. One final fun fact here on the side of Harvard students that are going into three areas, consulting, finance, and software, right, is decreasing massively as a share of all graduates in comparison to 20 years ago, where many more would go into all kinds of different industries, start their companies and so on, right? But now it's a very like focused area here, which probably has to do with a mix of status, earnings, also learnings, right? I mean, you very much, I won't, say that it's so to say not recommendable. You very much do have learnings, you have a network, and all these things that go hand in hand with that. But it's just a fact that this has been happening. So, yeah.
Okay, two last questions. Looking ahead, what's next for you? Maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, what will happen with Xerox?
Yeah, for sure. So let me point out 3 points here. The first one being solving the MRV challenge for good, right? So that means that in we do already have our device that we are deploying in different geographies, different feedstock, and so to say very much from the global south to global north to different feedstocks, to different climates, to basically prove it in all different environments, because that's also always a point with different MRV methods, right? Some work well in some geographies, others not. So that's the first point here, right? Truly, truly establish trust, enhance weathering, and how sequestration is being measured. Now, the second point here is to get enhanced weathering on a global scale, because as that goes hand in hand with also our the data idea, right, that you're able to pinpoint this and then to globally deploy this. And also on the side of awareness, right, because many customers, for example, they have never heard of enhanced weathering in the first place, the broader public, to make that point, right? And now there's all this activity going on that I mentioned in the beginning with the X Prize, where, for example, also coverage of major news outlets on enhanced weathering in Germany, in the US, around the world, with also a lot of funding, not only in equity but also product financing, because that's also always so important to have the bank's trust into this, right? And so what we want to make sure with our MRV method, to the first point, is that you have, so to say, bankable tons, right, that a bank will trust and will product finance, because it's still capital intensive, right? It's not a method where you have once a factory. I'm not saying once a factory is cheap, but it's a different capital structure for an enhanced weathering project, where you need to purchase the feedstock, the transportation, and all these things in order to get a project rolling, right? So that you enable also the financial sector to finance enhanced weathering projects. And then, as a final point here, and that's more on the 5 year side, to really get enhanced weathering to scale in deliveries and issuances, right? Not only in sales, because there we're not doing too shabby, but on the side of enhanced weathering deliveries that are hopefully then a product of all these different factors combined, of the MRV part, of the data part, of the cost part, that then all come together. And maybe this will then lead to a concentration to, for example, the global south, because others are not cost competitive. On the other side, you still very much have co-benefits for also German soil, right? So I would say that these 3 points are very much the, so to say, vision or goals for the next 5 years, especially on the side of How do you make enhanced weathering a big chunk of all carbon removals, and to make people trust and understand it and see also the beauties of its co-benefits? We always say it's a win-win-win situation, right? For the farmers, the soils, the developers. So it's, I believe, a very beautiful, awesome method here. A beautiful ball.
A good point, and a very helpful outlook for all of us. I fully agree with sort of the priorities that you set out. Making enhanced weathering mainstream is, an important one. And then as we're coming to the end of our conversation, I think you described your personal journey and the company's journey very well, and both laid out the challenges, the solutions that you have, and now the ambition vision that you're tackling and following as the North Star. Big ambitions, right? I just reframed this as making enhanced weathering mainstream, which there are smaller things that you could tackle. So,
Yes.
and we discussed before, sort of, you could have chosen a more comfortable pathway for your career, and yet you're the COO. What I'm interested in is sort of what keeps you going every day? What motivates you? What drives you to make that impact that you're delivering?
Yes. I love that as a question. I'm also because, for example, in interviews, it's always such a telling point on someone's motivation, right? Whether they will keep doing this, even, for example, if, the payment isn't the biggest one, or everything else like goes away. So, aside of I mentioned the team, but on the side of the personal motivation, I mentioned in the beginning, and this is a bit closing the circle, that I love going to the Alps, and there's just so many instances of, and this is one news cycle doesn't cover this, but this is a never-ending news cycle, and one that will only get worse. Whether this is natural catastrophes, whether this is the pollution of, for example, mountain areas, right, like the Himalaya, where you have now, and so you have all like you have a combination of human-made, so say let's say for example garbage, but also indirect damages, whether this is displacement, whether this is then into migration. I mean, this whole array of different impacts that we're going to expect is just so wild. So, I mean, to just know that we might have the potential to make a dent here in this entire development of our emissions are still going up around the globe, right? In Germany, they are no more increasing, which is already, a very positive development here, and also why we believe our location here still makes sense, as this country here sees that as an issue, opposed to some others around the world. But the solution cannot be let's bring capitalism down. It must be something where it's realistic, where you can have markets for this. So the hope is, for example, to also on the regulatory side, that you integrate the EU ETS with our carbon removal market, which is already now a process that is going on, that you have much more awareness on the necessity of carbon removals, and as one part of the solution, us, making this impact here on the local side, every day talking to a farmer, but also on the global side of having a solution that enables others to do their project, to talk to a farmer in Brazil, so to say, right, is very much what gets me going. So, to summarize it, sorry for being a bit here very all over the place. I would
Not
say
at
that
all.
it's a great team. Honestly, the people we have in our company are amazing. That's so great to build something with them. And then secondly, to make a dent in climate change, which at the moment is only increasing, and we need to be positively active about it, right? It doesn't bring anyone something to shout out. It's all going to shit anyways, right? Excuse my language. You must much very much be seeing the positive potential here, right? For example, greener cities. So have a positive vision of what it can look like, and we believe that enhanced weathering will be part of this, and we believe that our tech is going to help partners around the world to put out their own enhanced weathering projects.
Plus, what I really like about your approach to everything that I've learned today is, the co-benefit side of it, right? Like, it's one of those few solutions in the climate space where you don't just have the added benefits of, removing emissions or avoiding emissions in many cases, but sort of it does good and it's a circular approach and so on and so on. So like all those co-benefits you framed as the win-win-win situation, I think that's really strong. It's hardly ever seen. So good luck with scaling up ZeroX. I'm very interested in following your journey and personally all the best to you. Thank you so much for this very insightful conversation, Shay. I certainly learned a lot and now understand the market and the technology around enhanced weathering a lot better than before. So thank you so much for that, Hannes.
Jan, thank you so much for having this podcast. This is great. We need to have more people to hear your message. And as someone who's already been in touch with enhanced weathering for so long, I mean, you're also probably one of the few out there that already know have been part of that journey for so long. So thanks so much.